Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
you. This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
And good evening. This is Von Carricker. You are listening to Show Me Common Sense on Missouri Grassroots Radio. If you want to call in tonight, the number is 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. Got a neat show tonight. We're talking about First Ladies and the lady who would be First Lady of the state of Missouri. Bev Randles is going to be our guest tonight. She's going to talk about who she is for the people who don't know. I think I say the people who don't know a lot. I'm going to try to mix in another phrase for that. For people who are unaware, if you haven't met her yet, if you haven't had a chance to listen to her talk, if you haven't had an opportunity to run into her on the campaign trail, Bev Randles, the wife of Bill Randles, who is the Republican candidate for governor of the great, great state of Missouri. Bev Randles tonight on Missouri Grassroots Radio's Show Me Common Sense. Next week, if I'm not mistaken, we are going to tackle the subject of elder abuse. So we will be gathering stories. We will be talking about the laws in Missouri as they exist right now, and we will be dealing with those one at a time. Some bills have been proposed in the past legislative session. We'll talk about what good they would do, if they would do any good at all, how they could help you and your loved ones. And I speak from personal experience. My family has been victimized by elder abuse, and I know that tight feeling you get in your chest when you feel helpless from miles away. You can't do anything, or even if you're right there and you feel like you don't know what's going on and how you can help. We'll be talking about those things next week when we hit elder abuse as the topic on Show Me Common Sense. Tonight, great first ladies and great would-be first ladies. Of course, when you say those words, first lady, right now, all you think about is the big O, Michelle Obama. I like to look closer to home. We've got wonderful, wonderful, wonderful history in the state of Missouri with first ladies. And I guess when it comes down to it, you're looking at the state level. The requirements are different in the state compared to what's expected of a woman at the federal level. You know, today we think of Jackie O being the penultimate first lady, the epitome of style, of class, of intelligence, of kindness, hospitality maybe, I think is the big word. And of course, you know, biographies have been written and some of them have been unkind and most of them have been exceptionally kind. Now, we don't get too many. We don't get too many books about the first ladies of Missouri. Of course, we know some names, George Ann Nixon, of course, and oh gosh, I just had a brain freeze right there, and I'm sure that our guest Bev Randles will help me clear some of that up. But every one of them is an individual. Every one of them comes to the job, and make no mistake about it, it is a job with a unique perspective, a unique platform, a unique personality. And tonight we're going to get to know the personality of Bev Randles, who is an attorney, who is a wife, who is the helpmate and some would say better half of Bill Randles, who is running for governor of Missouri. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a really, really quick break here. We're going to do about a minute or so. And when we come back, we will be speaking with Bev Randles, and you'll get a chance to know her and hopefully fall in love with her. You're listening to Von Karaker. This is Show Me Common Sense on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Hello, this is Von Karaker. You are on Show Me Common Sense, Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. The guest call-in number is 347-677-1835. It is my pleasure, because I have had the pleasure of meeting this lady, it is my pleasure to introduce and welcome Bev Randles to the show. Mrs. Randles, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just great, Vaughn. How are you?
I am fine. Actually, I'm in a very good mood. I hope that the campaign trail has been treating you and your husband well.
Absolutely, it sure has.
Okay. Now, listen, a lot of people don't know who you are yet. Can you believe it? We're in this part of Missouri. Word's not getting out. How is that happening?
You know, it's a very busy, very hectic cycle right now. There are so many different races. People's attention is being drawn in a million different directions, of course, with county, you know, local races and all the way up to federal ones. And I think that now people are starting to pay attention just before the election, which is good. We've got a lot of people who, you know, say that they just don't really get involved until right before the election. And so we're focused on reaching those people right now.
I think that's an excellent strategy. I'm like a lot of people, and I'm wondering if you're like a lot of people. When you get home at night, sometime between 5:30 and about 9 o'clock, does your phone ring off the hook now with calls for political causes?
Absolutely. And that's the case, I think, with so many people. And I think that's one reason also that people sometimes want to just shut down, because they feel like, well, I'm inundated with phone calls right now from everything from charities to people running for office, and we're not immune from it ourselves.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that if you propose a strategy for how you deal with those people, would certainly listen and follow. My person, after all, your husband is running for a role that would make you a very influential woman in this state. Now, what prompted you all to do this? Didn't you have a comfortable and peaceful life before this?
We did, absolutely. And a lot of people who we were friends with and knew in that life thought we were insane for leaving it. But we were both very successful lawyers at a large firm in Kansas City, and Bill was an equity partner and an owner, and I was a rising star on the firm, and we were both making a lot of money and had a very comfortable life. But like so many people, we weren't happy with what we saw going on in the country, and this predated Barack Obama, and we knew that we both had a serious interest in politics. Bill had always wanted to run for office. And it was just honestly time to make a decision. Were we going to sit around and complain about what was going on, or were we going to get in the game and do something? And we decided to do something.
Now, who prompted whom?
Well, I think that he and I would both admit that it was me doing the prompting. he likes to say he had a high heel shoe in his back pushing him to do it. I think that's a little bit of an overstatement, but Bill has always wanted to run for office. He told me that about 10 years ago when we were just friends and having a conversation one day. He told me what he really wanted to do was to run for office, and that's why he'd gone to law school in the first place. And so as soon as he said that to me, I said, you should do that. I mean, I could see it because I knew he loved history and public policy. I knew that that's all he really ever talked about. And I just felt like it was an opportunity to do something that really mattered to him, and he was just letting it pass by. But when we became a couple, things changed, and he started to listen to me say that he should do it, and so he did.
Now, was politics your passion as well?
It was. I actually have been interested in politics since I was a little kid. I got interested in politics through Ronald Reagan and have really followed it very closely most of my life. I mean, from childhood on, there was probably a brief period in law school where I wasn't paying nearly as much attention. But for the most part, I have always been a political enthusiast. In fact, I was only a one class shy of having a double major in English and political science in undergrad. So I really love it myself.
Now, why did you decide to go to law school?
I had always wanted to go to law school ever since I was a little kid. I was about 8 years old when I made the decision to want to go to law school. I was actually sitting watching television with my father, a Perry Mason episode, and I just turned to him and said, I'm going to do that. I want to be that when I grow up. And my parents really stoked that. I mean, I had copies of CJS when I was a kid. And, Vaughn, you know how big those books are. And, you know, 9 years old with old copies of that. But my parents really stoked it, and it just never left me. So whether it was, you know, from that initial, you know, me saying it initially or, you know, their promptings or a combination, I just knew that law was something that really appealed to me.
Now, you are a Missouri girl. Is that correct?
Correct.
Where are you from?
I am from Sykeston, Missouri, down in the Boot Heel. If you're familiar with Lambert's Cafe, the restaurant Lambert's, home of the throw rolls, that's my hometown.
You know, I am familiar. I was born at the hospital in Sykeston.
Oh!
So, yeah, I'm actually from a little farther south than you. I'm from New Madrid County, but not that much farther. But I am familiar with Lambert, and I am familiar with the custom of throwing food at people.
That's how we do it.
That's how you do it. That's the truth. The dudes with the beanies and everything. Wasn't Lambert's voted one of the number one places to pig out on the Food Network?
Absolutely. It sure was. And it is.
I can believe it. I can believe it. Now, you have been on the campaign trail with your husband. And I'm going to tell a secret to the people who are listening. You are African American. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did I imagine people find out fairly quickly when they meet you. But you hate to spring it on them or anything like that. But there you are. Now, you are a conservative.
I am.
Are you? Would you use that phrase as it's used today, the conservative as dirty word, or conservative meaning what?
To me, conservative is, let me say that I know a lot of people think of it as a dirty word to acknowledge what you just said. Conservative, the way the media has portrayed us, is a very bad thing, very negative, backwards, and not open-minded. But conservative to me means I believe in smaller government. I believe in limited government. I think that government has a role and a clearly defined role that is delineated in the Constitution. And other than that, the government really needs to stay out of our lives and leave us alone. And when I think of conservatism, that's what it is. And, yes, I am that.
Now, as a conservative, married to a conservative, getting ready to hit the campaign trail day in and day out, how do you find the state of Missouri in your travels? And I'm assuming that you've hit all the corners, all the directions on the map of Missouri.
We certainly have.
How much mileage have you put on the family van?
I think his truck currently has about 73 or 74,000 miles on it that we've put on the truck. And then my car has, we've put about 15 or 16,000 on my car this year.
And, of course, he's a Missourian, so in a lot of places that are not Kansas City or St. Louis, he's going to have a truck. Is that about right?
That is correct.
Now, how do you view yourself? What is your role on the campaign trail?
Well, I wear multiple hats. I, of course, am the candidate's wife, and everyone wants to get to know the candidate's wife. And I think, you know, to be quite honest, particularly in my case, because I'm black, I also run the campaign. I run the day-to-day operations of the campaign, and I have since the beginning when it was just the two of us deciding to embark upon this. And so I do that. I also help with pretty much anything that needs to be done. When Bill is getting ready to go on the road, I make sure that he has food, and I will very often pack lunch for him and dinner for him so that he doesn't have to worry about stopping at restaurants. I am also sometimes the campaign secretary. Bill is wonderful at dictating because, of course, all those years as a practicing attorney, so he's very good at that, but he is probably the slowest typist on the planet. I type at a blistering pace, and so since he does all his own messaging, when he's ready to write another article or press release, I just sit down at the computer and he dictates and I type. So anything, whatever we need done.
Well, that's impressive. I mean, I understand that he does have a campaign staff, but I guess it makes a difference when you have your life partner there to who knows you better than anyone, who can steer you correctly. And if there's a high-heeled shoe in his back, I'm sure there's an oar somewhere along there, too.
It is, and he will be the first to admit that to anyone. I mean, Bill is wonderful, and he gives me a lot of credit, I think sometimes even more credit than I actually deserve. But the staff is, we have a great staff. I am very pleased with the staff we have. They are wonderful, very young and energetic folks. But, yes, he is at his best, I believe, when I'm right there with him.
Now, that makes perfect sense, and congratulations to the two of you for having that sort of support system for each other. I think that's something that people dream about in a marriage and in a partnership. So congratulations and kudos to the two of you. Now, in addition to your role as his right-hand girl Friday, Robinson Crusoe reference there for people who still read books, in addition to your role behind the scenes, what is it that you do on the front end? I mean, Bill is the face of the campaign, of course, but you are right there in many ways equally as important. What's your role at the front end?
I do a number of speaking engagements for Bill. In fact, I just spoke last night to the Kearney Tea Party at one of their meetings. Bill was at another event across the state, and I filled in for him. And I do that quite a bit. I've particularly done a lot of it this year because there's just been so many things that you have to get covered, and unfortunately the candidate can't be everywhere. So I am very often out front. I am more than happy to do things like I'm doing right now, have people interview me and reporters sit down and talk with me and answer the voters' questions when we're at events. So I am his second. You know, when he can't be there, or maybe even if he is there at an event and he can't speak with people, I do that for him.
Now, I have digressed greatly, because I said somewhere at the beginning of this show that we find out more about you, and all I've been able to squeeze out is that you're from Sykeston and you're married to Bill Randles and you two are at the same law firm. Bev, will you back up a little bit and tell people more about you?
Sure. I grew up in Sykeston, Missouri, as I said earlier, and my parents actually were both born and raised in Philadelphia, Mississippi. And for those of you listening who know much about Mississippi and its history, that particular part of Mississippi has a very sad and often brutal history with respect to race relations. But that's where both my parents are from, and they both love Mississippi, but they also left Mississippi in the early 60s. And they came to southeast Missouri, and that's where they raised our whole family. And I have There are 12 kids in my family. I have five brothers, and the rest are girls, and we're from a farm family. My dad was a farmhand until the day he died, and my mom's a housekeeper. But they instilled in each of us a definite desire to do something better. I mean, the interesting thing, and I think the thing that impresses me so much about my parents is there was never a chip on their shoulder about race. They, even given their background, they never said that there were things that we couldn't do. To them, the sky was the limit, and the only person who could stop us from doing what we wanted to do was us. And so from the time that I told my father I wanted to be a lawyer, that was it. I was going to be a lawyer, and nothing would stop me in his eyes. My mother bought books for me at garage sales, yard sales, and secondhand places because I was a voracious reader from the time I was a very small child. And I was a very good student, and my parents really wanted to stoke that. They wanted to be sure that if I could excel in education, well, Vaughn, I'm sure you understand, if there's a kid in meager circumstances, the way out is education. It absolutely is. And that's why education is so important to me right now, because for me, that was my ticket out. I grew up, Vaughn, you know this, of course, since you're from the state, that's cotton country.
And, yes, absolutely.
And so I grew up working in the cotton field. I grew up chopping cotton.
And me too.
You did.
Absolutely. That's how you got money to buy clothes for school.
Absolutely. You could fill in the rest of the story for me. That's it.
No. You share your story.
No, but I grew up in the cotton fields and the, you know, hot summers and 10-hour days. But I would watch cousins of mine and aunts who were much, much older than me, in their 20s and 30s, and that's what they relied on. I mean, that's how they were going to feed themselves in the winter when there wasn't any, you know, the ag work had, you know, come almost to a grinding halt. That's what they did to feed their families. And I just knew that I didn't want that. I mean, for me, it was a matter of, am I going to get out of here and actually do something with my life, or am I going to be working out in the hot sun, you know, when I'm in my 20s and 30s? And I just knew that I didn't want that. So
I got out. Now, I remember when I chopped cotton in high school, and I graduated in 1987, and I remember watching the one or two people in my town or in my county who had jobs at McDonald's and thinking, one day if I work hard and I really, really, really want it, I'm going to get a job indoors at McDonald's with air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my dream. I had low expectations, but that was the dream. And chopping cotton is not easy. You tell people what that's like. Tell them what that day is like. How does that day start?
We would start the Monday after school let out. That's when the summer work period began, and we would start at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, depending on what field we were going to, and we would go. And these, you know, of course, the rows are so long, and you're going up and down the row chopping the weeds out of the field, and then, you know, turn around, do the same thing again all day long, and, you know, an hour break at lunch, and you scarf down some food, and then you're right back out there until 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. Go home, get cleaned up, do your chores, eat supper, and then back at it again the next day.
And how much were you paid for your efforts?
I was actually trying to think of this the other day. I think it was $3 an hour, maybe $3.50, but I think $3 an hour is what we got paid.
Wow. I think we did the same thing when we got up, and there was always that one dude who drove the truck who knew where all the fields were that had to be chopped that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that dude got a cut of every check or every payout. Was that right?
Yep, that's absolutely right. That's exactly how it worked.
and did absolutely nothing for that but drive us out there and back home again and provide a cooler of water, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm. That is how it worked, and with most of them, that is exactly what happened.
And I think we did it from sunrise to about 6 or 7 o'clock at night, and I think my take home every day was $23 cash after paying off the dude who drove the truck.
It's amazing, isn't it, how much, how little money that we made back then. But it was a driving force for me. It was one of those moments, or one of those periods, I think, that you can point back to in your life and say, that helped shape who I am right now. And that certainly was it for me, because I started when I was 9. That's when I started chopping cotton every summer from 9 years old.
I remember that. We used to go out in the field with our entire family. That's what they called it, going to the field.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had that job, you were up with your oldest shirt, your oldest hat, your own hoe, your nastiest shoes, and you hit that field as hard as you could and tried not to pass out when the heat got too bad, and you made that money and you were glad to get it.
That's right, because as you said, that's how you got your clothes. That's how you got your school supplies. If you didn't work in the summer in the field, you weren't going to get those things, so it wasn't an option.
Oh, absolutely, and that was the discipline, that you had to get up and you had to endure that heat and that filth and the sweat and just being so grimy you could barely move and do it every single day. Was that the discipline that you applied that gave you the drive to get through undergraduate school and law school and go for that big-time job at the white shoe firm?
Absolutely. And I always tell people, I think that more kids these days down in Southeast Missouri ought to have to chop cotton, because it does develop those traits. If you have everything easy and it's handed to you, you don't really appreciate the kind of work that it takes to really obtain anything. And yes, getting up, having to get up, not an option, I will if I feel like it, if I don't feel like it, I won't. No, you had to do it every single day. And we also had to do it with excellence. I mean, if some folks would out there, every now and again you get someone who, half chop their row and they'd mm-hmm. leave weeds up and down it. That person was going to get one warning. If they got caught doing that again, they were going to get fired. You had to
absolutely.
Be able to pull your own weight. And those are just good life lessons.
Those are absolutely, and I'm glad you're here to talk about that. We're listening, and you are listening to Bev Randles on Show Me Common Sense. If you want to call and ask her a question or just listen in, participate in some way, the number is 347-677-1835. Now, Bev, you go home very often?
I don't.
Back to Saxton?
I don't get home not just to visit as much as I'd like to. I've been home a number of times on the campaign trail, but I don't get home as much just for a family visit anymore.
Do you get an opportunity in your travels on the campaign trail to see how communities and families are affected by welfare in Missouri?
Absolutely. Yes, I do. And when I am home, I get to, I do see that, but you see it in other places also. It breaks my heart, particularly when I see it down in Southeast Missouri and among some of my own relatives. It is very disheartening. I think people fall into a sense of complacency, and they have very often gotten just lulled to sleep, and then this sense of paternalism, well, someone's going to take care of me, someone's supposed to take care of me, rather than believing that you are the master of your own fate and you can do something better with your life than just sit around and wait on a government check or, your next round of food stamps.
Now, when I was in high school and I was growing up in that neighborhood, if you made it to high school, if you were fortunate enough to graduate with a diploma, you had two choices, or three rather. One was you joined the military. The other was you went to college. And the third one was that you stayed home and tried to live within the system that was there. And I'll tell you, it's heartbreaking to see the people who go off to college and last a semester or a year and come back home and end up on the welfare system. Do you see a lot of that as you travel around?
I do, and I'm with you. It's very disheartening, and it's very frustrating because I am not one of these people who believes that college is for everyone. I think there are different paths for every one of us. But for kids who, you know, are reasonably good students, I mean, not even straight-A students or B, but reasonably good students who want to go to college, it does break my heart when I see them, you know, they go, they spend a semester or maybe a year, and then they flunk out, because I tend to believe that that's just from a lack of discipline and a lack of real understanding of what you have to do to succeed in that environment.
Well, that's impressive that you have that sort of perception. And I sound like I'm sucking up, but that's because I like you. So you'll forgive me a little bit. Now, the number is 347-677-1835. We have Dave on the line who has a question. Dave, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Vaughn?
I am great. Do you have a question for Bev Randall?
I do. Hi, Bev. How are you?
Good, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. I heard you say, and then I heard Vaughn parrot, that you were down here working in the cotton fields and you had this drive to do something better. What I want to know is, as I look around at the victim mentality of our society, are there people out there, is this something you just became self-aware of? Was there somebody out there who instilled this drive in you? And if so, are there people out there who just don't have any choice but to do this for the rest of their lives?
Well, I think I certainly had my parents in particular who were always pushing me and always saying that I could do better, that all their children not just could do better but would do better. We did not have a choice. We were going to at least finish high school, and we were either going to go to college, we were going to get a trade, but my father would always say, you are going to do something to make your lives better. But I also believe that people have different innate levels of drive and motivation within themselves, and I think I am also, I'm someone who is naturally motivated, but I think with anyone, that can be squelched or it could be just left to linger and die, and I think anybody can do better if they have the right message and they have the right mentors around them. For me, those people were my parents. And I don't minimize for people who are in the inner city or in rural areas where there's very, very little to look to and it's pretty bleak. But there's so much around us now. There's television, there's social media, there's, you know, you name it. There are different things out there that show kids there is another avenue. And I think for those of us who have, quote, made it, we do owe them a responsibility to at least try to pull some folks out once we've made it.
You are listening to Bev Randles on Show Me Common Sense on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Ms. Randles is the wife of Bill Randles, who is running for governor of Missouri. What we're going to do now is take a quick break, and then we're going to get back on the air with the issue of how Bev Randles could serve as a motivating force to the people of Missouri as her husband hopefully becomes elected and represents us all. You are listening again to Show Me Common Sense. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, more with Bev Randles on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
coming to town.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Good evening. This is Von Carricker. You are listening to Show Me Common Sense on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. I am here with the lovely, the intelligent, the also fun Bev Randles, wife of Bill Randles, who would be governor of Missouri if you let him, and I think you should. That's just my personal opinion. And, of course, the views expressed by the host on this show do not reflect those of anyone else but those of the host. But I think everybody else agrees with me. At least I hope so. Mrs. Randles, you, as First Lady, would naturally be vaulted in the position of celebrity, certainly within the state of Missouri. And oddly enough, you would be one of the few, and I can't think of one, and there probably is one currently. I remember David Paterson was married at some point, the former governor of New York. Would you be the first black first lady of a state in the United States?
You know, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. My guess is yes, but I'm not positive.
And you don't care, do you?
I really don't.
Okay. Now, as first lady, being black is not going to be important to you, as perhaps we could say it is at the federal level. How do you see yourself acting out or carrying out your role as First Lady of Missouri?
Well, when you're First Lady, just as if you're in an elected office, you are in that role for everyone. So I would be the First Lady of Missouri representing and interested in and caring for all people of the state. I think the way I see my role is I can help bring light to some issues that are important to me, issues like education, issues like what we've talked about earlier with what's going on with welfare in the inner city and the rural areas that's really hit some populations very, very hard and has been difficult for them. But I can also go out and speak on behalf of various groups who are also interested in those sorts of things and really shed some light on it that way. As you know, I have no problem getting out and speaking and voicing my opinion, and I will do that.
I noticed. Now, as a person whose platform, and I'm just calling it a platform, and forgive the beauty pageant lingo, as a person whose platform would be education and I guess welfare reform, correct?
It would, and of course, prison reform is really one that's near and dear to my heart, but that's another, it's probably another topic entirely, but yes.
We can touch on them. That's no problem.
Okay.
This is, for all intents and purposes, this is your show today. This is the Bev Randles show. So let's start with the one that's nearest and dearest to your heart, prison reform. What is it about prison reform that's caught your attention?
I believe firmly that we have a serious problem in education and that is intimately tied with the prisons. And so they're not really disconnected. In my mind, education and prison reform at least greatly intertwine. We've got, as you know, so many young people, particularly black young people, in the prisons in Missouri. We've got kids from the inner city in St. Louis and Kansas City who are just filling prisons across the state every day. And you hear people when you go to these education forums and think tanks, and everyone says the same thing, you know, educate them now or imprison them later. Well, I think part of the problem is we have taken the meaning of what it actually means to go to prison. We have taken that and really distorted it. I think when I hear young people coming out of prison and you say, well, how was it? And they say, oh, wasn't that bad. I hear that far too often. It wasn't that bad. It ought to be that bad. It ought to be that prison is a terrible thing. It's a terrible experience. I don't mean that we should be in there beating people, but it shouldn't be a place where you go pump iron, play basketball, and lounge around all day, biding your time until you get out. There should be actual reform taking place. They should be actually required to do real work, not just, you know, lounging about and a few things here and there, but actual work. I'll be honest with you, I don't see anything wrong with chain gangs. I don't. I think...
That is awesome.
I believe firmly if you took a 16-year-old kid and took him to who was getting in trouble and took him to the side of the road and said, you see that person who you looked up to, they're working on the chain gang. Do you want that to be you? And it would make it embarrassing to them. Then I think that would help drive them to get an education or at least to stay out of jail. I hear it far too often. I've heard it from too many of my relatives that it's not that bad. It really ought to be that bad.
You know, I remember the statistics, and of course, I went to law school in Cleveland and stayed there for several years. And I remember it was about then that the reports came out about the Scared Straight program. Do you remember that?
I do.
And I remember the study saying that once the kids survived the big scare, it was like going to a haunted house. They came out bragging about it, and they weren't intimidated anymore. Now,
yeah.
Can you speak to that? Because obviously there's a difference between doing a one-day, essentially prison haunted house and doing serious time in the clink. Can you speak to that?
I think that the Scare Straight programs are a good idea in theory, but you're right. A single day is not really going to do the trick. What I'm getting at, though, is that you have so many people, these kids, looking up to, say, some 25, 26-year-old guy who just got out of prison, who then tells him prison's not that bad because you get 3 square meals a day, you don't really have to do anything, you know, much for your keep, you're not really working. So for a lot of them, they would rather go there and be housed and taken care of because it's not that bad. I'm not saying that most people don't want their freedom, but it seems that the not that bad component of it means that we have people, kids saying, well, you know, if I go, I go. It's not that big a deal. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said I see.
Yeah, so I think if we make it harder once their people are in prison, and not just that, Vaughn, as you probably know the statistics better than I do about the cost of prison, that the amount of money that it costs to keep someone in prison every day in the state, and the numbers just keep rising. I read an article about it about a month ago that really shocked me, and we're paying for that. I mean, someone is paying for that. If you're
not
in prison,
only,
you should have to work for your food.
Not only.
Throw it.
Hey, I am all for it. I had to work for my food. I don't think I got so much as a peanut butter sandwich that I didn't do at least one full load of laundry and ironing for as a child. I'm not opposed to that. But I agree with you. I think the standards for punishment have been lowered to the point that it almost, in some cases, seems as if we're coddling people. Now, Rahm Emanuel, a name that I don't say too often, it came out and did an interview not too long ago, in the past couple of days, I think, where he basically implored the gangbangers of Chicago to take their murdering to the alleys and stop shooting the younger children. Do you think they've lowered the standards for punishment in Chicago?
It certainly sounds like they have. Chicago is just a completely different animal. I don't really understand it. The fact that it's a place that Rahm Emanuel can be elected mayor says it all.
Oh, we take the low blows here, but that's okay. It's our show. We can do that. We can. Now, when you talk about lowering the standards or seeing making things easier and having a prison system that where it's just not that bad, and people have become used to it. I want to touch back on welfare again. You talked about the shame factor of being on a chain gang as a prisoner. Remember when it was embarrassing to be on welfare?
Yes.
I remember as a child, there was a brief period of time, and it was the most hateful period in our life, when we were actually on welfare, when my mother was a single mom for the first time and she hadn't yet gotten her second and third job. Do you remember that? How everybody talked about how great government cheese was, but nobody was willing to admit that they were actually getting it directly themselves?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And didn't they make you stand in line in a very public place to
yes.
get your hand out?
They absolutely did. And it was embarrassing. You're right. Nobody wanted to admit it because it was shameful.
Oh, yes. And if we did have government cheese, we surely swore that somebody we knew who had to go get some welfare was the person who had extra, and we just kind of took it off their hands.
Oh, we lived the same life. That is exactly it.
Now, what do you see as differences between times back then? Because, of course, back then, food stamps came in multiple colors and these big books, too.
Yes.
And if you were seen, and I know my mother would go to the store as late in the evening as she possibly could to avoid doing the food stamp dance where you'd be shuffling behind your cart because people behind you would be trying to see what you were buying with their tax dollars.
Right.
Now, how has it changed since we were kids?
The sense of shame in our society really has been really dwindling down for a long time, and I think it is we are developing this attitude of, well, it's okay if the government takes care of it, because for some reason society is beginning to believe that the, quote, government owes me something without really having a firm understanding of who's paying for that, that that's someone's tax dollars. The sense of the loss of shame, I think, really was really budding when I was a kid, and you and I are close to the same age. It was budding then, but still it was very shameful to have food stamps. It was, and we were on food stamps off and on when I was a kid, and I remember being very embarrassed by it, and my father not wanting us to, you know, to get them, and you had people who, at least if they were getting those sorts of things, they were working as hard as they could so that they didn't feel like they needed that help, that they didn't want to have that help. It was a happy day when we no longer were eligible for food stamps. Our whole household was very happy. But we've been growing closer to this idea that it is the government's job to take care of me rather than it being the person, their family, you know, your church. I mean, that's the order that it ought to go in, rather than, okay, well, I've got a problem, let me go to the federal government. It's not federal, okay, state.
Now, you've gotten out and seen more of Missouri than I have in my entire lifetime. You've probably seen more of it than I have all my life, and you've seen more in the past year than I have in all my life. Do you see any fundamental commonalities? Because this country has become so divided along partisan lines, team animosity, team rivalry. What do you see in the state of Missouri among the people you've met that unites us?
Well, at least, and of course, at this juncture, since we've got the primary, we are talking to Republicans primarily all over the state. But what we see in all the different areas of the state is a desire for Missouri and the nation to revive itself. I mean, people are willing to sacrifice. They're willing to sacrifice their time, you know, their talent, their money. They're doing things that they probably 5-10 years ago never would have envisioned doing, you know, spending a Tuesday night or a Thursday night at a Tea Party meeting or a conservative meeting, walking door to door for candidates and hosting things. People are doing these things because they see that they're not going to recognize the country that they've known and loved their entire lives. And I think that that willingness to sacrifice is something that I'm very proud to see, at both as a Missourian and a Republican.
Now, I went to Seattle not too long ago on a business trip, and I was sitting in one of those trendy restaurants with a bunch of painfully trendy people, and one young lady asked me outright how I managed to live in Missouri, quote unquote, with all those rednecks. And you mentioned the Tea Party, and I mention the Tea Party as much as I can because I'm a big fan of having a valid third party to push this country in a new direction. Black people and the Tea Party, the universal impression is that they just don't mix. Can you speak to that?
Well, I think that that is unfortunately a product of the media and the media's portrayal of the Tea Party. Look, I will be honest with you. When the Tea Party first started to emerge and first started bubbling up, I mean, and I'm talking about in those first few months, I wasn't quite sure what to make of it because of what I was seeing on television, what I was seeing in the news and what was being written about it in various newspapers. And what I decided to do, because I had some friends who were getting involved with the Tea Party movement, and I thought, well, these are people whose views are exactly like mine. We agree down the line on basically everything. They're proud to be conservatives. So am I, so let me see what it's about. And what I realized is very quickly is that what was being portrayed in the media is not reality. Unfortunately, most folks have not bothered to delve any deeper than that. You know, I've been to a number of Tea Party meetings and rallies, and the way it's portrayed in the media is actually shameful and it's sickening, because there is not I have not seen a shred of racism. And now there are people there who obviously don't agree with President Obama, and they're very vocal about that, but that's not racism. That's just, I don't like what this guy is doing. And I think that because the Tea Party has been so outspoken about our current president, that blacks have largely said, well, they're racist and they can't be trusted, without really listening to the message.
Okay, so are you willing to go on the record and say that the Tea Party members you've met are not racists?
Yes, I am, unequivocally. They are not.
Now, my experience is the exact same. I have yet to find a racist Tea Party member. And in fact, and maybe you can tell me if you become aware of this, I find that our local Tea Party is an interesting mix of liberals, libertarians, conservatives, family people, church people, people who are struggling with their faith, businessmen, teachers, family members, grandpas, granddads, law enforcement, retired businessmen, and fishermen.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. It's an eclectic bunch. But the person referring to Missouri as a bunch of rednecks, that's how they want us portrayed. And honestly, I take offense with, you know, the redneck. I have friends who gladly refer to themselves as redneck, and they are salt of the earth people. So, you know, what do you mean when you're saying that? But it's born of so many things, ignorance. And look, Vaughn, my mother grew up in Mississippi, as I said, and she is in her 60s. I won't say her specific age because I don't know if she'd be comfortable with that, but she's in her 60s. But my mother has been to a number of Tea Party meetings and rallies. My mother is an independent voter who most of her life has voted Democrat, at least at the top of the ticket, Senate and other offices. She's gone both ways. But she is very interested in what the Tea Party is doing because, as she said to me, the first rally she attended, I really agree with pretty much everything that they're saying.
Oh, yes. I was shocked when I attended my first Tea Party rally, and it sounded like I was sitting in my own home.
Exactly.
You know, I could have been listening to my uncle who raised me. I could have been listening to him, except without all of his raucous laughing, because he's a great laugher. Now, Have you had any terrible experiences on the campaign trail with your husband?
I don't think I have. No, I mean, not really terrible. I recently had an experience where someone, people always ask me, well, when you go to the rural areas, how are you treated? And what they mean by that, of course, is are there racists out there calling you names and treating you badly? And I, of course, always tell people, no, if anything, I'm in danger of being hugged to death at these meetings because people are just happy to see me there and they seem to really love me. Well, at an event recently, it was an outdoor event, and a gentleman did use a racial slur with me, and he called me a name that was fairly unflattering, and that you really, no woman wants to be called. Starts with the letter B, but the guy was a Democrat.
You betrayed. You betrayed your race and you betrayed your birth party. Is that correct?
I didn't even get that far with him because he was yelling his slurs and his obscenities to me as I was walking away. But he said that all Republicans are liars and hypocrites, and your husband's a liar and hypocrite, and we don't need your kind around here. And it was just the craziest thing because I thought, what are you even doing here then? I mean, why even bother? And I found out after because I said, well, with the things he was saying, he certainly wasn't a Republican. And then someone afterwards told me, no, yes, he's a Democrat. So actually I found that very interesting since, of course, Republicans are supposedly the racist. But no, that's been my only negative experience. Otherwise, really, I am in danger of being hugged to death.
You know, that's odd that you mentioned that experience because I have found that there seems to be a sense of betrayal among liberals and Democrats. Now, back me up on this because I know, I'm not even predicting, I know I'm right. People don't even ask you if they don't know you what your political affiliation is. They look at you and they assume instantly that you are a liberal Democrat. Am I right?
That's right.
And that is a sad commentary on the state of America when people, isn't that a form of racism in itself?
I agree. That's exactly what I think. You do not get to judge me based on the color of my skin on any criteria.
Absolutely. Mrs. Randall, we're going to be running short on time here. I'm going to let you take a few moments, about 30 seconds here, and just speak directly to the audience as the lady who would be First Lady of Missouri. Do you have any parting words?
Well, I appreciate being able to be on, and it has been my pleasure to get around the state and to really get to know the people of Missouri. One of the things that I said to my husband last year as we were riding through some small town after a late night event, and we're driving through, and I said, you know what, this process has actually made me fall more in love with my state. And I don't know how anyone can run for statewide office and go all over and meet people from all walks of life and not feel a very, very great sense of pride and love for the state. And that's what I have, and that's what my husband has, and that's why we're doing this and giving it everything that we have. And I just want to tell people how much I appreciate them. And I hope that they get to know more about my husband, BillRandles.com, and just go learn more about him and get out and vote.
Bev Randles, thank you very much for appearing on Show Me Common Sense. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Vaughn.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for us. Good night, good luck, and we'll see you at the next hearing of Show Me Common Sense.
God bless America,
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Bye.